always good to be introduced when you preach with the walls came tumbling down. That's a great song. And I love to sing it just like these young people do, because it affirms something about the power of God to achieve things that are well beyond us. We're delighted to have visitors in this assembly, as we often do, and we welcome you most warmly. Some we have seen several times, and that makes us feel even better. Some weeks ago, months, one patient sister of mine in this congregation put a question in the question box. It was really an invitation to address a subject. It was not so much a question. She just said, please discuss the ways that Christians in a local congregation can communicate better, how we can understand each other's differences and work together in harmony, even if our personalities or styles are different. And then, parenthesis, in matters of judgment and opinion. Of course, what she was saying was that we ought to be the same when it comes to the way our Father wants us to behave and to live, both as individual Christians and in our life together. But obviously, anyone who suggests such a topic has seen a problem. And that's not an amazing thing. When you bring together people in a local church, there are going to be disputes. There is no human relationship, no relationship between two human beings, whatever the circumstance, that will not at times be fraught with misunderstanding and disagreement and even disputes. And the communication, obviously, is critical to the maintaining and the growing of that relationship. And when communication is bad, relationships are bad. Because communication is the lifeblood of all relationships. We need it in the family, and we need it in the family of God. And I'm glad tonight to address this subject, not quite so formally maybe as I have addressed others, but in the same spirit with which we answer the questions out of the question box tonight. Two women in Philippi had a dispute. And Paul in the 4th chapter of Philippians verse 2 said, you all be of one mind. Christians in Corinth had disputes. Disputes that went very far over property, evidently, and even got into the civil courts, much to the apostles' dismay. And he reproved them for that. Sometimes we just disagree about judgment. Paul wanted Apollos to go to Corinth, 1 Corinthians 16:12, and he said it was not at all his mind to go at this time. I don't know what the upshot of that was. Paul thought it's time for you to go to Corinth. They need you down there. And Apollos said, I don't think I can go now. Paul and Barnabas had a sharp disagreement. Acts 15, verse 39. About whether or not they should take with them John Mark when they went again to establish in strength the churches that they had planted in a preceding journey. I don't know if that represents all kinds of possible disputes that can be had among Christians, but I do know what the answer is. It doesn't make any difference what the dispute is. If it's a matter of what God wants us to do, then all we need to do is get our heads inside the Scripture and study earnestly and find out what that is and be sure we are certain walking within the clear will of God. That's first principle when it comes to a Christian. It's what we're about. But there are some undergirding principles that you can look at that must be present and must be followed at all costs if we're going to communicate with each other well. I thought about a lot of places. Fourth chapter of Ephesians is a wonderful chapter that talks about relationships between Christians. But I thought I'd start out with the 12th chapter of Romans and proceed from there to some other text that I think will be helpful. You know that chapter begins with the statement, I beseech you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and acceptable to God. Now, it's not going to do any good to try to solve any dispute in this assembly, any dispute or problem of communication with another Christian, if we have not made that commitment. If somebody just decides he doesn't care, or that he'll do what's right if it doesn't cost too much, then, of course, it's not going to make very much difference how much you invest in the effort until that attitude changes. But I wanted to particularly notice chapter 12, verse 9. Let love be without hypocrisy. And verse 13, in love of the brethren, or that same passage. I'll get this correct. Right? Let love be without hypocrisy. Abhor that which is evil, cleave to that which is good, in love of the brethren, be tenderly affectionate one to another, in honor preferring one another. And what that says is, you've got to love each other. And if that's not in place, I want to tell you something, the fat's in the fire. If we're having a misunderstanding here, and I really don't care that much about you, you're just sort of a dispensable part. Now, I want to say this. You cannot treat your brother and sister in a local church as a dispensable part. You can't say in your own mind, well, I'll get along and I'll work this thing out. We'll understand this thing if we can, but otherwise, I just don't need this individual. That's not what this text said. This text speaks about how we are joined together in a body, each one functioning in that area where he has ability and skill, verses 3 through 8. Parallel teaching on this is in the 12th chapter of 1 Corinthians, where it says, though we're one body, we have many members, and no member has the same office. So that each member brings something to the function of the body, and that's stated also in the 4th chapter of Ephesians, I think verse 15 and 16, where each joint in the body supplies something, and therefore is important. So, we have to have a true love for each other. What does that mean? 1 Corinthians 13, in practical terms. If you really love your brother, here's what that means. Love suffers long, verse 4 of the chapter, and is kind. Love does not envy. Love doesn't push itself, vaunt itself, is not puffed up, does not behave itself in an unseemly way, does not seek its own, is not provoked, does not keep an account of evil, does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Now that'll keep you up. Well, a lot of nights thinking about that. And what that means is, what is my attitude going to be when I've had a misunderstanding with some brother or sister? When we are not exactly communicating well. Well, the first thing is you've got to love each other. Now, I will give you another one out of this text. Chapter 12, verse 3. For I say through the grace that was given me to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but so to think is to think soberly, according as God has dealt to each man a measure of faith. What does that tell you? It tells you you can't let pride get in this picture. Love and pride don't go together. And so, you're going to have to ask yourself, in connection with any dispute that you have, am I acting in a humble way? Is my spirit what it ought to be? And do I have a genuine love for this other person? And then when you've got that in mind, I mean, get rid of the pride and put the love in, then here's some practical applications. Get to know each other. I think sometimes the reason we have difficulty communicating with each other is we don't know each other. There's no way in the world that communication can go well when people don't know each other. Therefore, out of this same text, tender affection, it says, for one another. Well, that means family love. You know, we are all, we come in different shapes and forms and dispositions. And I'm talking about things that are not critical. I'm talking about the fact that it'd be a mighty dull world if everybody was like Earnhardt. I've got to tell you, there'd be a lot of people around yawning regularly at this kind of a world where everybody's like Earnhardt. I'm glad that that's a lot. I mean, I hate to look in the mirror every time I have a relationship with somebody else. And that's the way God made us. We come into this world different, and that's the way it's supposed to be. So if we want everybody to be a clone of, you know, myself, then that is a most inordinate kind of desire. And because we're going to be different, then we're going to have special affection for each other in those differences. I listen to families talk about their relatives. And they'll talk about some member of the family that's kind of kooky. But you know, they love that individual. He or she will do strange things and they'll laugh about that, but they love that individual. And don't you dare start attacking that person and saying they're not any good, because you're going to have a fight on your hands. Because in spite of those quirks and peculiar habits that all of us have, this individual is cherished. And I tell you, that's the way it ought to be with us. We ought to have a tender affection for one another. Right down the line. But if that's going to be the case, we're going to have to get to know each other, and that's where another verse comes in this particular text that I think we need to hear. Verse 13, it says, be addicted to hospitality, communicating to the necessity of the saints. That means that we're going to have to go out of our way to spend time with them. And sometimes that's not the way it is. A lot of times we go out of our way not to spend time with these people. Because, you know, we just have this little dispute and I don't want to spend time with this individual because it's not comfortable. That's not the right attitude. I've always admired the attitude of Reckon John Smith, the Kentucky preacher, who in the middle of the 19th century, if he found anybody who looked like he didn't like him, that insightful gentleman would almost work it so the man was forced to invite him home for dinner. I mean, he worked it out so they got together. It is not the spirit of tender affection, and it's not the spirit of the Christ and love if we don't seek engagement with each other. So if you see somebody you're having problems with, spend more time with them. If you're having a communication problem, spend more time with them. Spend more time with them so that you'll get to know more about them. In that connection, bear one another's burdens. In this passage, 12, verse 15 says, weep with them that weep, rejoice with those who rejoice. How in the wide world are you going to come to weep with those that weep if you don't know where their sorrows are? And how will you rejoice with them when they rejoice if you don't know what their delights are? Sometimes we know so little about each other. And that's a sad thing. Because what it does is to make us disposed to withdraw any time there is any kind of disjuncture. Any time there's some sort of little quarrel that might come up or misunderstanding. We need to enter into the lives of our brothers and sisters openly. Get to know them. And therefore, as Galatians 6:2 says, bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. Let me tell you something. I misjudged some people in my day. I mean, I've concluded on initial experiences in local churches that Brother A or Sister A, well, you know, they're not going to be much help around here. And I've concluded early on in some cases that, well, now, Brother B, now there's a genuine man, and Sister B, there's a genuine woman. They're going to be some real, that's real material here for the spiritual life. And you know, what I found out is that my judgment's not too good sometimes. It was altogether too quick. I appreciate what Brother Bill Hall said. He said, and I gave this advice to Sid when he went down to Columbus, Mississippi. I said, you just sit around and be quiet and watch and observe for a good while. The cream will come to the top. And sometimes the fellow that comes around talking a big talk and saying a lot of wonderful things turns out to be nothing but sham. And the fellow that may not look like much and you think he's not doesn't have much to contribute turns out to be somebody who really has something meaningful in his heart and life. But how am I going to know that if I don't listen and watch and experience and spend time with those people? Third thing is, do not judge until you know. Be fair. Jesus said in John 7:24, don't judge according to appearance, but judge righteous judgment. Now, sometimes it's necessary to make a judgment about people, not a condemnatory one, not one which is accusatory and one which is intended to put somebody down, but to make a judgment about people's attitudes and dispositions. And I'm saying to you here, don't be too quick to judge. And you cannot make a judgment until you know this individual, until you have experienced life with them. Number four, do not talk about other people in unhelpful ways. Ephesians 4:15, here's a principle of communication, speaking truth in love. I'm not sure that the truth there is the gospel. I rather suspect speaking truly, sincerely, in a spirit of love. Therefore, that just simply means that you cannot, when you get aggravated at somebody, run around talking about them with other people. And the reason you can't do that is because that is not loving. You're not doing that to help this other individual. You're doing it to vent your own frustration. Somebody hasn't understood you, and everybody knows that you're totally understandable, that you never say anything that could be misunderstood, and you just don't understand why this other individual is not taking you at your word and understand who you are and what your intentions are, and this other person has misunderstood your intention. Well, possible. Well, what good will it do to go tell everybody else about that? 4:25. We could take up Ephesians 4:25 along the way, which suggests to us, as another principle of communication, wherefore, putting away falsehood, speak truth, each one with his neighbor. You know, this sounds like something that everybody would just do. Everybody will tell the truth and be honest and forthright about things, but the actuality is sometimes we're not fully truthful. Some teacher talking to little children said, you children need to be honorable, you need to be good children. Remember George Washington. You know the challenges he faced. What challenge did George Washington face? The little boy said he couldn't tell a lie. And that's his problem. Well, that's our problem. We can't tell a lie either. And if you want to see that as a drawback, then that's a difficulty you're going to have with the cause of Christ. Don't tell some untruth and don't go around talking about other people in an unedifying way. Verse 29 really gets to it. Let no what kind of speech? Let no corrupt speech proceed out of your mouth. How are you going to be able to determine whether it's corrupt speech or not? Whether or not it edifies or builds up. Say the things that are going to build up. Help other people. That'll stop a lot of talk, won't it? Will it not? Will it not stop a lot of talk? It stops some of my talk sometimes when I catch myself talking about some individual and I realize that this is not going to be helpful to that individual. And it will affect communication because what you say is sooner or later going to get back this other individual unless you just are lucky out of your scope. And then you've got some real trouble of communication. Leviticus 19:16, the Old Testament says, don't be a talebearer among your people. Are you a talebearer? Do you like to tell stories about what so-and-so is doing, especially the things that are not good or the things that aggravate you? Then you need to stop that. I need to stop that. Go to your brother. That's the fifth principle. Go to your brother or your sister. Whatever the problem. If you feel wrong, go to them. Matthew 18:15. Go to the brother and talk to him. If I'm reading correctly the sense of the scripture, it's that
the first effort to solve a problem of relationship with someone else is to talk to them personally. It shouldn't involve others at the beginning. You go talk to them. It's only when the problem is not solved that other people are brought into it. We need to feel that responsibility to go because we're concerned about the other. And go to your brother if you feel they are doing wrong. Galatians 6, 1 and 2. And when you do, be humble. I learned that lesson early on. I jumped on somebody one time, and believe you me, I found out what was wrong with me immediately. I mean, I asked for it. I came in there acting like I was a paragon of spiritual purity, and I was talking to this other individual about their sins, and I was taking the preacher strong approach, and it wasn't too long till I got back what I was handing out. Take heed to yourself. You think about all your failures, and when you're talking to your brother or sister, take that into account so that you can restore them. But the important thing about communication, you've got to go and talk to them. Now, when you get there, in all this communication, learn to listen. James 1:19. Preachers like to talk. So they think that the solution to everything is as soon as you get there, you start talking. Okay? That's not the solution to everything. The wisest thing you can do when you're having a problem communicating with somebody, sit down, just ask some questions and let them communicate to you. Have I said something that seems to not be right? Have I hurt you in some way with something I've said? And you just listen. And don't get defensive. You're trying to find out how they feel, not what necessarily the truth of the matter is. You've got to find out how they feel about this thing. And so you just sit there and listen and ask questions and let them talk to you. And invite them to talk to you. Insist that they talk to you. And you listen. And try to hear not only the words they're saying, but how they're feeling about things. And once you know your brother and sister and what they're feeling, then you can maybe be of help in correcting the problem of communication. And next, obviously, guard against anger. Be swift to hear, slow to wrath. It's easy to get hot. Especially if somebody says something that we think's unfair. And we're immediately on the defense and thinking about ourselves. It's not Christ-like to be on the defensive. Because if we're on the defensive, what that says is, I'm thinking about myself in this situation. How am I going to come out here? And that's not love. Because love says, how's our relationship going to come out here? How's my brother, my sister going to come out of this thing? Guard against anger. Ephesians 4:26, be angry and do not sin. And remember James 1:20 says that the wrath of man does not work the righteousness of God. I have already confessed as a young man that I had a hair trigger temper. It didn't take much to set me off. And I suffered for that. You don't know how much. Because that will get you from one stirred up mess to another. And it will destroy relationships. And it'll make bad matters worse. And it'll make matters of no consequence into something horrible. Anger is not good when it is not brought under the control of love. So, guard against anger. And then when you open your mouth, remember Proverbs 15, verse 1, speak gently. And you're not going to speak gently unless you got your temperament under control. My biggest problem is that what I'm feeling seems to show in the color of my face too easily. And I've had people say to me, You're angry.
I would say sometimes, I'm upset. It is true, and they could tell.
I can have a phone conversation. You're angry. And I've said to one brother, yes, I am, and I'm really struggling to keep it under control so that I love you and all this thing. Speak gently. Because a soft answer turns away wrath, and grievous words stir up anger. But you know, all this is going to take self-control. It's going to take thinking ahead of time and planning ahead of time to have a certain response to certain situations. It will likely take a considerable amount of prayer, asking God to help you to respond in that way. And if it's a problem with a certain individual, it's going to take praying for that individual. You cannot hate the person you pray for. You cannot feel anger at a person you are praying for. It puts things where they need to be, focused upon the needs of the other individual. Now, one more thing. Be patient and thoughtful. Ask this question. Is this irritant or this failure to communicate with this other individual a matter of personality or a principle? Are you just aggravated because they're not doing it just your way? Is it another case of Paul and Barnabas? I won't tell you about Paul and Barnabas. They had a sharp dispute, but they didn't carry any grudges. No indication of any grudge. I'm not saying to you that it's all right to have a lot of sharp disputes. I don't think Paul and Barnabas would have said afterward that this is the greatest thing in the world, but I think they handled it in a manly and godly way. But is this problem between us a matter of personality or principle? Sometimes we just don't like people that are not like us. They're not doing it like I would do it. Well, I know that. But is it wrong? Is it having some bad effect? He doesn't lead singing like I like them to lead singing. I know that there's some song leaders don't lead like I like it led. But what is this? Is this something that is a matter of principle? He doesn't preach like I like preaching to be done. I just don't like that kind. That doesn't attract me. I know I hear preaching like that too. And sometimes I do some of it. Which is worse. I don't like some of the preaching I do sometimes. But is it a principle here? Or is it a matter of personality? Listen. I've told churches that seem to think that the way to take care of things in a local church is run one preacher out and get another preacher in. I said, well, I mean, what goes around comes around. You ought to be able to do that with the members. and a brother in, and this has nothing to do with me personally. I'll tell you my spirit about preaching the gospel and working with local churches. I want to know 6 months before the first individual in that congregation knows it's time for me to go, and I'm going to be gone before they know it. Because I am not worth any problem. But a good friend who is a legend of his own time out there in Washington, D.C. area said he didn't have to worry about having to leave because all the members kept rotating in and out from around the world. Church changed. He didn't have to leave. But I'm telling you, if we're just going to have this sort of attitude, I want... The preacher's got to be the man for all seasons. He's got to be the one that suits all of us. And you just have to suit yourself. Is that the way it is? That's not the way it is. I understand that some men become ineffective. I feel it at times in places. I've ceased to be effective. And sometimes it's because I have worked and worked and worked. And I'm losing my drive. And I'm not staying around there to fail in a situation where somebody else can succeed because this work's too important for that. But I'm simply saying that in our relationship with each other, we've got to learn that we're different. And not to begin to judge each other and to be irritated at each other because personalities are different. I've learned a lot of people in this congregation. And they've learned me. And I'll tell you something. I've learned to love some people that at the first didn't strike me as quite so lovable. But they are. And I didn't have to force myself. I just came to be aware of the great things that are true of them, quiet things sometimes that they wouldn't advertise, but as a consequence of getting to know them, of sharing life with them, of making a point to do so, of making a point to get to know them, then things change. Christians, like people, come in all kinds of dispositions and personalities. Listen a lot. Spend a lot of time with people who are your brothers and sisters. It concerns me, and I'm sure it's come through in the preaching, that some of us just don't seem to have too much time for other brothers and sisters here. And I know that you'd probably say, well, I'm so busy. We have so much to do. I know that. Life is like that. But you know, we've got to have a set of priorities here. And the greatest bulwark we can build against miscommunication in any future time, and it's bound to happen, I'm going to say something and somebody's going to say, what do you mean by that? And maybe I know what I meant by that, and maybe I don't even know what I meant by that. But the point of it all is, there's going to be something I'm going to say, and there may be something you're going to say, and I'll say, what? Well, what do they mean by that? That's true of us. We're always thinking beyond the words, you know, because we communicate in many ways. But then how are we going to handle it? I'll tell you something. If we already know each other, the question's going to come up, what do you mean by that? I don't care what he meant by that. I know what kind of person that is, and it's not important. And I'm not going to imagine a bunch of stuff about it. And I'm not going to draw up some scenario, some wicked scenario, because love hopes all things, believes all things. And I know this individual, and I know what he or she's made of, and that's not their disposition. So until it's stuffed in my face and beyond all denial, I'm going to believe the best about that situation. Now, if it just is something that I cannot dismiss because it's so clear, then I need to go to my brother and sister. Just have a talk, listening a lot, and then responding in gentleness so that we can keep this thing like it ought to be between folk that are in the same family. But, you know, none of these little rules about listening and keeping your anger down and being sure to give a gentle answer and being patient or mean a hill of beans if we don't love each other. And we haven't made up our mind that we're going to do it. We haven't realized that's what we must do. That there's nobody here who's dispensing. That God loves every one of these. And we're in a family where we're trying to help each other to do right and to go to heaven. And we'll go through some rocky times. That's just the way it is. Relationships go through some rocky times. But if we hang on to the Lord and His way, and we try to behave like He would behave in that situation, then I believe communication will always be enhanced. And people that haven't understood each other, even had a clue about each other before, come to understand, and in understanding come to have a warm affection and appreciation for that individual. And if there is a need that exists, a burden to be borne, then that burden will be borne. And that situation will turn into something good and fine. When I first came to Douglas Hills, one of the big adjustments was that when I taught a Bible class, I didn't get to see everybody and be with them. Because I'd been in churches that had one adult Bible class, and that was it. And so when you taught that class, you got to see everybody every Sunday and talk with them. Of course, I was teaching all the time. But here, it's rotating around. I get to be with people for 3 months, 6 months, and we'd get close and talk about a lot of significant things, and then they'd just leave and get a new group in, and then they'd have to start all over again. And that was troubling to me. And I just finally had to realize, well, you just can't do it that way. You've got to find some other venue to be with people and get to know them better. And I'm still trying to do that because I need to do that. I need to know you, and I need to be close to you. And I want to be close to you. But that's my task, not your task. That's my responsibility to do that. Was that informal enough? Love one another from a pure heart fervently. In love of the brethren, be tenderly affectionate. Bear one another's burdens. Whatever you do, let it be done in love. The answer to all human problems is there, and we are in the family where those problems are to be solved in a godly way, because we are the servants of God and the disciples of Jesus Christ. You may not be a Christian tonight, and maybe you've struggled with your relationships with others, and maybe you haven't, but it'd be unlikely if you hadn't had some challenges like that. But I will tell you, the answer is here. Your relationship with God is the thing that determines your relationship with others and gives you the key to solving all kinds of problems. Human beings are by nature people of relationships. We live by relationships. We define ourselves by relationships. We can't get along without others. And so, therefore, it is imperative that we write these relationships with each other. And the only way to do that is write our relationship with God, because He's the one that knows how to do it and will enable us to. That's not the only reason to be saved. We are saved because we're lost and because we are away from God, and we need mercy and forgiveness. And that mercy and forgiveness has been made available to us in Jesus Christ. He died for you. And if He hadn't died, you would have had to die, and I would have had to die, and not just die sort of dead, but die ultimately dead. I'm talking about essential death, in the sense that we are cut off from God forevermore in a never, never land of the Spirit, which is without hope and filled with total and absolute despair for an endless eternity. That's what hell is. And God does not want you to go to that place. And we're inviting you tonight to come and have a right relationship with God by confessing His Son, who's come in love, and being baptized into Him for the forgiveness of your sins. Above all else, be serious about this. Don't take this as some sort of sideline. Make it the heart of your life, because anything that has to do with God is more important than anything else. Won't you respond to the appeal that God has made in His Word, while we stand together and encourage you while Wayne leads us in this home?